Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013.
Damn.
Ooh, spanning two decades now. That's exciting.
Ooh.
In any case, my name is Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is...
Billy Crash.
Absolutely, Billy Crash. You are. And tonight... we are going to be discussing the 2019 film by Joe Bagos, Bliss.
Is it really going to be a discussion or a sparring session?
Oh, Bill, I think people like it a lot more when we tear each other's hair out.
I don't have any hair, motherfucker.
I don't know. I'll just try and massage your scalp while we... while we get into it here.
Oh, real good. Then I'm going to give in. Sure, you're right, Johnny. Massage my scalp, baby.
Let me get the Jergens, okay?
Dude, I almost spit coffee all over my computer. Jergens, you freak.
That's not coffee, Bill.
Oh, my God! Not again.
But in any case, this movie has been getting, I feel, a lot of attention, or at least it was a few months back when it hit disc from Dark Sky Films and premiered on the streaming platforms. Before that, I think it was getting a lot of notices on the festival circuit. That's, I think, how I first heard about it, because people were kind of chattering about this film that they'd seen, that had kind of blown their minds in so many ways. And, you know, as with anything else, I'm curious about this type of stuff. Anything that gets kind of is kind of getting attention from people I pay attention to,
right?
I usually give a little extra consideration and prioritization to, in terms of seeking it out and watching it for myself.
Same here.
How did you first hear about this film, Bill?
I think it was Kim McDonald or something, and Dixie Fairy on Twitter, and I was intrigued because, like, I noticed it was coming up on... and this was the weird thing. It was coming up on people's best of lists, and it was coming up on others as their worst of lists. And I'm like, one of those movies. So, and then the other night, I was like, I got to watch a film. I'm sick of all this free crap on Amazon Prime because it's shit. Because, you know, I'm sick of watching some kid, you know, hey, I made a movie in my backyard with a phone. Yeah, fuck off, kid. And it's like, study craft, you little shit. And, so I saw Bliss, and I'm like, yeah, I've been wanting to see that. And I punched it in, and now we're doing a show because, well, you
why
tell
are we doing
them.
Why are we doing a show on this, Bill?
Yeah, why are we doing a show on this?
Because Billy texted me a couple nights ago saying he'd watched Bliss and saying how I should see Bliss, not remembering that Bliss did not make it on my best of last year list. It was actually at the very bottom of my worst of list last year, and when Billy was saying he loved it, I was like, okay, it's gonna be one of those.
And to quote from his text, and Bliss was my worst horror of last year. I hated that thing. And I'm like,
still do. Yeah.
And my response was, oh man, poor you. And that's the show. We're done.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We appreciate it. But before we get, now that we've given away the ghost, Bill, do you want to outline the plot of this film for those who don't know? I mean, well, there you go. I could say some things, but yeah.
All right. There's this artist who can be an asshole. She's a drug addict. Her name is Desi, played by the wonderful Dora Madison, who gave all for this role. She's an artist, fine artist. She has to finish a piece so she can get money for rent, all that fun stuff. But then she finds out that the gallery that she's in, they're not selling her shit. She's having trouble with her agent. She's having trouble with her friends. She's drinking too much. She's taking too many drugs. And she gets this drug called Bliss from a friend. And all hell breaks loose. The end.
Yeah, that's actually a perfect synopsis, Bill.
And George Wendt's in it.
Yeah, but you'd hardly know it because he's kind of shuffled into the background of this thing. I was like, I was like, hey, George Wendt, and he's been in some cool, actually some cool horror stuff. He was in King of the Ants, that Stuart Gordon film that I like, playing a heavy. He was also in he was in that Masters of Horror episode. So he's got some. He's got his feet kind of in the horror genre, so I was kind of excited.
Yeah, he was in House with William Catt, and that's fantastic.
Oh shit! You know, I still haven't seen that one.
What the fuck? Oh god, you got to see that. The first one.
Yeah.
Pay attention to the art in the background. That's all I'm gonna say. It's a blast. It's a blast.
Okay, I'll check it out. There's really no. That's one of those ones that everybody's seen that I haven't. But yeah. But it's like George Wendt's got range, and then I was kind of like, oh, what they did with him in this movie was kind of like a, to me, it was like a waste of George Wendt, but that was just me, yeah.
Yeah, I know, but it was a, you know, the movie was short from what I remember.
No, it's 80 minutes with the credits.
Yeah, yeah, 80 minutes with the credits, and, you know, George Wendt, you know, plays the part he was supposed to play. Actually, he's there with Abraham Ben-Ruby, right, and Mark Beltzman, you know, and they're... they were great. I don't know. It was just because you're watching, you know, it's Desi's journey through, well, the path of destruction she creates as I think she said fuck in the movie like 1,075 times or something like that. You know, she was just pissed off and there was like no bringing her down and...
Yeah, I feel like it exceeds the number of times it was said in Scarface and Glengarry Glen Ross, actually.
and Street Trash.
Combined, yeah.
It was very visceral, and that's what I liked about it. I loved the music. I loved how it came together, because I'm watching this, and 5 minutes in, I'm like, this is like, this guy's like, you know, Bagos is like, yeah, I like Abel Ferrara a lot. It's like, you know.
Oh, that's apparent, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it just felt like, you know, Joe's his son or something like that. And he was like, let's have a film that's visceral, gritty, like almost like a what the fuck's going on kind of thing. And as the movie progressed, it got bloodier and crazier and bloodier. And then it, you know, roll credits, you know, and
yeah.
Usually when I watch a movie at night, that's my wind down time. If it's not good, if it's, you know, whatever, I fall asleep. I fall asleep or I fast yeah. forward. While I'm fast forwarding, I fall asleep because the movie's so shitty.
Wow.
This one, I did not. I was glued to it. I was enamored. I sort of fell in love with Dora Madison and True Collins, who played her friend Courtney. yeah. Anyway, and I don't know. I was just like, this was great. The music. I loved what was going on with the painting. I forgot the artist who did the work, who did the actual painting. I don't know if that was Mike Lemick. He was the art director, so probably not. But I forgot. But I was just like, I'm there, man. I loved it.
So it kind of sounds like, Bill, it kind of hit the spot, like, after whatever your day was like, you sat down to watch something. You're talking a lot about, I feel, the aesthetics. Is that kind of what you're responding to the most? Like, you're talking about the music and like the sound design and the look of it, kind of. And I know you were mentioning Dora Madison as kind of the
it was all of it. But I know we're getting the story now, because it's like there seemed to be like some gaps. There seemed to be some like, wait, what? You know, kind of moments. Mm-hmm, and it's funny. You know, I sort of want to write an article on, you know, what do we do with movies that we love that have like mistakes in them? Can we avoid them or whatever?
Gotcha.
And I was like, nah, she's fucked up, so the movie's fucked up. You know, like, you know, she's wasted on drugs, so, you know, she's gonna, like, because there's seemingly no real conversion from her taking this drug to becoming the thing that she becomes.
Yeah.
And her other friend is like in on it. And it's like, where did this shit come from? And I remember going, where did this shit come from? Fuck it, I don't care. And I know, like, any other day of the week, I would be the guy on the opposite side going, you can't let that go. And so to be honest, and this is why I feel a little unprepared, is I'm trying to figure out how to justify that. And I can't. And
right.
I either need to watch it again or just go, maybe this was like a real, like sometimes with, you know, Abel Ferrara's films, you're like, whoa, what happened? Wait, why, what? And a lot of people don't really question and they just roll with it, you know, because of its visceral nature. You know, I've got to use visceral like 20 times already.
No, that's okay, Bill. I forgive you. And if you want to watch the movie again, I'll give you the copy I blind bought. So,
fuck, I'll buy it from you for $50. I love it that much.
Because I'm like, okay, that justifies me talking smack on this movie because I blind bought the damn thing. So they've already got my money. So the least I can do is be honest about what I got out of the movie.
Yeah, why'd you hate it so much, man?
You know, Bill, and this is something that really stuck in my craw, and it sticks in my craw with a lot of, I would say, a certain faction of genre filmmaker these days. Like the biggest example I could think of is like an Eli Roth. Okay.
Okay.
Where he kind of wears all of his influences on his sleeve and such. So when you're watching his movie or movies, you're kind of getting, oh, it's like, oh, I recognize that from Evil Dead. Oh, I recognize that from,
right.
Cannibal Holocaust or something like that, you know, and it becomes this sort of like high, it's like you're high fiving the fans, kind of like it's this fan service sort of thing. You're giving people what they want. And what kind of bugged me in a big way about this movie, you were talking about Abel Ferrara, and there's definite, you know, it's screaming Abel Ferrara in your face for 80 minutes, basically. You know, when I watch a movie and it's like I'm taking on that experience, not unlike the experience you felt like you were taking on with Bliss, like say something like Beyond the Black Rainbow for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I can sit down, watch that movie, I'm totally spellbound for like 2 hours watching that. And then maybe afterwards I'm thinking to myself, oh yeah, Panos Cosmatos had, you know, he took some images or some sounds from this, that, and the other thing. Whereas with something like Bliss, I was sitting there the whole time, and every time Bagos was like referencing something, it was just like right out there, right in my face, and he wasn't doing anything, and this was a huge point of frustration for me. He wasn't doing anything to distinguish his film from the stuff he was pulling from. I'm like, okay. There's, you know, for example, there's two characters. I think the one you were referring to, Desi's friend who gives her the drugs. She's part of like an Only Lovers Left Alive couple, you know, who look a little like Tom Hiddleston and Tilda Swinton, you know, and serve in kind of a similar capacity. And then there's the addiction I was thinking about, you know.
Right. I was thinking of the addiction as well. I was thinking of the addiction meets Driller Killer to a degree.
Yeah, a lot of other people have been bringing up Driller Killer, probably just in terms of the apartment / gore factor, you know.
The music, all of it, the color, the lighting, okay. You know, I don't know, just had that feel to it.
Okay. And, you know, I was thinking of even The Hunger, you know, the Tony Scott film.
Wow. It's like it's almost like you're thinking too much.
You know what, if this film had been, and you know what, I'm not opposed to abrasive movies that are abrasive in their aesthetics,
right,
like
exactly.
This one is hugely abrasive from the get-go, yeah, to the point where I think there's a warning at the start about if you're epileptic or experience seizures, don't watch it because there's going to be strobe lights or something like
that. Strobe light effect, yeah, which is right from the beginning, it's like...
In the credits, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't like Enter the Void, you know, insanity, but right from the beginning.
Yeah, and I just so the fact that I wasn't getting anything but the callbacks to these other films out of this film was bothering me, because I kept thinking to myself as it went on, I was like, damn, I could be watching The Hunger. I could be watching The Addiction instead, but instead I'm pushing myself to finish this thing.
Wow. See, I get what you're saying, but I didn't see it as
okay.
I didn't see it as blatant or you know, I felt like, okay, this guy, you know, Joe Bagos, because I enjoyed Almost Human.
Okay.
It's horror sci-fi, you know, not perfect. It could have been perfect, but it wasn't. But he wrote and directed that as well. I thought it was more like, I don't know what the fuck I'm trying to say. It was more like, you know, hey, man, I love Abel Ferrara. I love that, like, that element that he conjured, like, where you have, like, this love-hate relationship with what you're even looking at, especially mm-hmm. with, like, Bad Lieutenant.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, because a lot of people talk about the end, like, okay, what happened? What? You know, it's like, but I love the movie. And it's like, well, that's cool. And,
oh, I think that ending is perfect in that.
Oh, yeah,
movie,
yeah.
Actually.
No, yeah. I do too. Yeah. And, I was just like, it didn't seem like over the top thievery to me. I just didn't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So when what you're saying, Bill, is like, it felt, like, to you, it felt like a Joe Bagos movie. It didn't feel like something else. It didn't feel like something more Bagos than Ferrara, I guess.
No, it was definitely more Ferrara than anything. Because I don't know if, to be honest, you know, Bagos, you know, he produced 5 movies, he directed 5 movies. It's almost like when I watch, like, I love Takashi Miike,
sure.
And he's made like 8 million films, and you could watch all of them. And I've only been able to find, it's almost like free jazz with him, because I could see certain movies from him and see no relation to other movies that he did.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's like, what the hell? You know, if there's like some major blood thing at one point, it's like, okay, that's Miike. But sometimes with some of it, if it's a drama, if it's a historical piece, if it's a musical even with him, like, mm-hmm. I can't see any relationships to other things that he did. He seems like, you know, he doesn't have like this things that these elements of film that define him as a filmmaker. So I haven't really seen that with Bagos yet to actually make a decision. I don't think he's done enough or he really knows what his style is. I mean, I'm looking forward to the new Brandon Cronenberg film, because it seems like he took, you could tell he's like, you know, he took you know, he's definitely his father's son, and he's amped up body horror to something else. And from what I'm hearing about this new one, he's taking it even higher, which is insane. So, and I think he has an aesthetic that's already established that I could see him continuing for every film that he makes. But Bagos, to me, he's a little bit like Miike from what little I've seen so far, in that you could watch one film and then the next and not realize it was the same director. So I don't know. Maybe he responds to feeling or something. Maybe he saw like Driller Killer, and maybe he was like on this binge of watching,
I'm sure he was,
Ferrara films, you know, The Addicted and everything else. And he's like, fuck. And he's like, you know, and hey man, let's make a movie. You know, maybe it was that. Maybe it was that simple. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I see what you're getting at with the Takashi Miike comparison as well, because Takashi Miike doesn't seem nailed down to anything, and that's what kind of makes him consistently interesting as a filmmaker.
Agreed.
You know, genre is like he's always busting into all sorts of genres. You know, he's not just a horror. He's not just the guy who did Audition or Ichi the Killer. You know. You know, there's 13 Assassins, and there's
Gozu, Visitor Q.
Yeah, all that stuff. Some of that's like satirical and darkly comedic, and yeah.
Very, yeah.
Yeah, I guess the thing that I can't get past, the big thing I can't get past is the borrowed parts of this film. And, you know, I think the same thing about Eli Roth. And I also think a shortcoming of Bliss that I also feel is a shortcoming of like Eli Roth and even guys like Adam Wingard, honestly. It's kind of like the characters that, when you're following characters who are shrill, obnoxious, and just, you know, practically begging to get stuck in some torture chamber hellhole just so you can give us the gory payoff of seeing them get killed. To me, that's fucking lazy. Because anybody can write a shrill character who says fuck a lot, you know, and can make the audience look forward to, you know, at the end of 80 or 90 minutes, seeing that person get killed in some horrible fashion. Problem with Desi is that, I think you alluded to this earlier, Bill, she has no real arc. She's the same fucking asshole at the end that she is at the beginning. She's the same people alienating, people abusing, goodwill abusing person. And I don't have problems with asshole characters in movies, but mm-hmm. God, at least make your asshole interesting. She was not an interesting character, and she seems endemic to me of the way like Eli Roth will write a female character, you know, always down to take her top off and have sex with some guy, but also, you know, oh, she's one with the guys too, so it's like a string of f-bombs, getting drunk, getting stoned. It's this very frat boy way of writing female characters. And I'm not saying there aren't people, females like Desi out there. I'm sure there are plenty of women like Desi and within that very scene, actually, who are just as intolerable as her, you know. But I just was like, I could not get behind her character. I did not care about her journey. I felt like she did nothing to remotely earn my interest, let alone my sympathy for what she goes through. You know, the gallery manager, her manager is saying like, oh, well, your show's getting canceled. You know, her boyfriend, Jeremy Gardner, right?
Yeah.
He's at the end of his rope with her, but he keeps giving her additional rope to hang herself. They keep giving her too many chances, and they're like, but they're fed up with her. And I was like, yeah, even at 10 minutes into this movie, when we're first seeing these characters, I'm sick of her too. I hope she's going to change at some point, but she never does. I feel like Bagos is just expecting all the increasingly trippy imagery to kind of substitute for that depth of character that I feel is totally missing in this film. And that's another big bone of contention with me about this movie.
You said bone. I like,
obviously we differ on that, but yeah.
No, I mean, what
show
I like,
show me a bone, Billy.
This is really, wow. Here and now on the air. Oh my God. Anyway,
so people can hear. Yeah.
What I liked about what happened to Dora Madison is, yeah, she's not changing. She's becoming uglier, which was I thought was great. And I loved how it's like that she became even more of a monster than she could ever imagine becoming. And, you know, creating her, you know, like she was in her own hell. She sort of had a way out. She didn't take it. And she created this extreme hell for her and everybody around her. And the end. And you know, I just fucking enjoyed it, man. So I'm back to watching a movie a night, usually a horror movie a night. And I'm just watching stuff that's just so dull and lame and just bleh. And the funny thing is, one of the things that I liked about it is, like, the drug that she takes is called Bliss. The movie's called Bliss. And it's something that she could have had. It's something she could have achieved. And she didn't. And it's like, she was like, no, I'm such an asshole. I'm not going to your Bliss, man. And it's like, okay, great. And, you know, the whole world, you know, is going to implode. And it was, I don't know, I just like that. You know, like even the shots, like the cinematography, which I really enjoyed in a lot of spots, that was by Mike Teston. I was in LA for 3.5 days, and I can't even explain to you or anyone on earth why I fell in love with LA, only seeing like maybe like 10 miles of it, of its like what is like a million miles wide all over the place. I saw so much crap and crud and disgust, and Hollywood's a complete shithole, and I'm like, why did I fall in love? I love LA, like why did I love this? And it's like he showed that, like I kept seeing this stuff. Like she even went down a couple of streets that I had walked on, And I got a weird chill, and I'm like, but I could see somebody like that living there, and just like, because somebody like her almost ran me over twice when I was in LA. And
it was Desi, Bill.
It was the bad bitch. And it just felt like there's this emptiness, this hollow element to it that I don't know. I just like love that too. I cannot. I've thought for like 3 days since you said we're doing a show on it. I'm like, ah, oh, man. I'm like, I cannot come up with any answers, man.
Well, it sounds like the movie struck you kind of in the right place at the right time. You know, just you know, who is sometimes it is. Sometimes there is like that. Just how does something connect with us? And sometimes we can explain it away, and sometimes it's a little more challenging, especially when it's more of a. As you said, Bill, I will agree that Bliss is a visceral experience.
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely an endurance test for me, but not in the way the filmmakers intended. But
yeah, I'm sorry, man. Sorry, you didn't dig it.
No, it's it's okay. So you would say, like, you're kind of thinking, like, as a reflection of. The contrasts of Hollywood or Los Angeles, kind of, you have that sort of there's sort of the beautiful contrasted against the ugly, and it's full of kind of people like Desi who are probably struggling to make a living off their art when everybody else is trying to make a living off their art as well. So
yeah, but it wasn't just LA. I think it was, you know, indicative of like the country, because like when you said like Desi's one note, it's hard to look at any character in there as not being one note. And haven't we sort of become that way? Like, aren't we, like, as a nation, you know, I'm not getting political or any crap like that.
No, go ahead, like, Bill. Get political.
It seems like we're stuck in a fucking rut. And it's like, you know, with growth and everything inside of us, you know, externally, you know, like, I don't know. It's like the country's just like in a moribund state. And you know, so like I'm watching right from the beginning, and this is what I really hated about Desi. Was she needs the money. You know, she wants to live in the apartment. She's telling the landlord to like pretty much just fucking hold on. I mean, and he's like, hey, this is a business. You know, yeah. I like this. It isn't a charity, and you know.
Well,
and
she's telling him like what he should do, and she's not the one with power in that situation. So yeah,
exactly. And she's not having the painting done on time, and her agent's like, eh. And you know, and she's demanding about getting to this other like gallery owner or agent or whatever. And the thing is, she's driving this gorgeous fucking classic car, and it's like, asshole, if shit's not working, guess what you need to sell? And she's like, no. It's like, it was almost like you could have put a fucking tiara on her head, you know? And so I was really like, I really wanted to see how is she going to get torn down, because she's just, and not even just driven, because it was almost like she wanted to finish the painting just to finish the painting, not because she was passionate about her own art. And I'm like, you're really hollow and really an asshole. And so I wanted to see how this played out, because I was like, she's going to get hers, and I want to see that. And holy crap, man, it get really bloody and shit, you know? And I'm like, as the blood's flowing, I'm like, man, Palco needs to see this, you know?
Because good Lord, I would be interested to see what Greg has to say about this movie.
He said he's going to watch it before this show airs, because he said, you know, he's like, I got to see it now. Because I'm like, Palco, you need to see this movie, because I know, I'm like, and I it was funny, because I'm thinking about Palco, and I'm like, he's either going to really love it or really hate it. And I think everybody watching this movie seemingly doing the same thing. I haven't heard anyone like, it was okay. It's either you're blissful about it or you're not, you know? It's like...
So some of what you were saying there, Bill, was interesting. Part of your experience of watching that, wanting to see Desi kind of get her... come up, and in so many words, when you saw that she wasn't going to change or learn anything from what she was you know, her constant string of using and abusing people and demanding too much of people and just generally being a total nightmare when she doesn't get her way every step of the way. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? She has these friends. She has the, you know, these people who come around to her who
why?
Well, that's it. And I'm like, what? Like, if there was a prequel, like, how would she be? You know, because but then again, her friends were limited to like three pretty much, you know.
Yeah.
And I sort of know somebody like that. And I was thinking, like, even if you, when you look at the poster, like, you just want to punch her in the face because like she's like, who's this asshole with the shades on and the smug look, you know?
Yeah, the melting shades look. Yeah, yeah.
But the funny thing was, not one character changed in the whole movie.
No.
And the beauty of that for me was, if you don't change, you die. And we, you know, because change is the only permanent thing in life. I know people who are younger than me who are stuck. They are stuck in, like, well, when I was a kid and I was like, you said that? Dude, you're like, you're not even 40. You know, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And all of these people were stuck. All of them. And she became, well, she helped some of them get unstuck and she became unstuck. And so I thought it was a great kind of, like, you know, cleansing overall, like by movie's end,
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I think maybe a little of Maps to the Stars or something like that. I'll tell you where I'm going with this.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I like where you, I think I know where you're going. Go.
But kind of this notion of, I feel like Hollywood has been depicted like this a lot, you know, kind of satirically in movies, where it's just kind of like a string, just a really big club of people who are just kind of hanging on to other people, kind of just kind of like parasitic almost. It's like, you know, well, I can't not talk to this person because they buy drugs from me, or, you know, they do something for me, they give me sex or whatever, kind of thing. So that's what keeps people hanging around. Or maybe the promise that a person like Desi, hey, maybe once she gets her groove back, she'll get some money and maybe I can see if I can chisel away some of that money for some great painting she's done, or say I knew her or something like that. So I feel like there's kind of that, a little of that Maps to the Stars desperation going on in there, of kind of the shallow depiction of Los Angeles and people who are really just out for themselves. I think Maps to the Stars does it a lot better, but with, like, Julianne Moore's character. But
yeah. Well, I can't argue that at all. And what I, you know, enjoyed about this was none of these characters were like, no one was really, like, making it. No one was really big. No one, you know, like, they were all leading a life of mediocrity in their own different way.
Trust fund babies, yeah.
Well, I don't even know if it was trust fund babies or it's like, well, my day job's X and I'm just doing it like, okay, I could pay the rent and go out and get, like, stoned or something, and it's like, that's it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no one had aspirations. Her whole aspiration was just like, Can I get my shit sold so I can have a little bit money so I could not have to worry about shit for a while? I mean, that was it. It wasn't like, oh my God, can we gotta sell this painting and hopefully it's to this guy who knows that guy so I could become bigger. And like, she even like had a fan come up to her in the bar. She just like ripped the guy's throat out. And she's like, fuck you, because that was yesterday, man, and I need to make like $1,000 today so I can pay my rent tomorrow, and that's all I give a shit about. There was no sense of history, longevity, desire beyond instant gratification. And
so it's kind of a paradox, Bill. She's kind of living hand to mouth in so many ways. But she's also doing everything in her power. She's just naturally alienating everybody who might be able to reach out to help her, you know. So there's this push pull between her exceedingly obnoxious artist persona and the people who are giving her a shot, maybe because, like, the friendly drug dealer or her boyfriend who's had enough but continues to entertain her bullshit. continue to like be like, okay, well, I'll just give her one more chance, and you know, maybe she'll get her act together, kind of thing.
Yeah,
but that wasn't enough for me. I wasn't buying it.
No, hey man, that's that is perfectly fine, man. It resonated with me, and I enjoyed it. Clearly, you didn't, and I thought it was a cool, fast ride into like the pit, you know, into the abyss. You know, it was just I really enjoyed it.
And you know who else I was thinking of? Bill.
Tell me.
Well, a filmmaker the two of us appreciate, Greg Araki. And you know, again, in a thing where I'm thinking about other movies while watching this movie, I was like, I thought back to the Doom Generation of all things.
Yeah.
And you know, his thing when he was getting his start as a filmmaker was kind of, people dismissed his movies as nihilistic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, it's just like, what's the point? You know, it's just a pointless road movie or whatever, kind of, or, you know, the movie Nowhere or The Living End or something like that. And the thing with him is, I think there's a deception to kind of his work, because there is stuff going on thematically and with character under the seemingly shallow surface of his films. And I realize this is a very subjective take on my part. Like, anybody else's mileage may vary with this, you know. Because that's why I was thinking about it, because I was like, well, you could look at some of the characters in his early movies, and yeah, maybe they don't necessarily change a whole lot from start to finish. It's like stuff happens to them, but you know, are they different at the end? I mean, I think in the Doom Generation, Jesus, after what they go through,
yeah,
I think it's beyond a doubt that they've been changed, kind of, and their nihilistic take on the world has probably just gotten worse. But there's this humanity that you can see has been totally drained away from the characters at the end of that film. And it's like, I get that with Araki's films,
Nowhere and all, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, his recent stuff is much more, I would say, it still has that nihilism and it still has that bleakness, but it's a little more palatable in a strange way, even though the subject matter is still tough.
Mm-hmm.
With this, I wasn't getting that at all. I was just like, this is the brand of nihilism verging on cynicism, I think, that really just turns me off, because to me it feels like a guy just jerking off with style, pardon the expression. That's
I'm fine with that expression. Greg Araki, for people who don't know, it's not a horror movie, but Mysterious Skin is a dramatic feature that he did in 2004. It was released in 2005. That's a 5-star movie for me. That's brilliant and amazing and his best work. And you know, even when I think of his other stuff, you know, he had varied characters, and sometimes it was silly, you know, or fun, but it, you know, there's always a dramatic element to it. There's mm-hmm. like a Joss Whedon playing, you know playing element at times. But this was just like this was like going to a show and seeing like a crazed, you know, death metal band just going like ape shit for like 80 minutes, and then the set's over and you're like, what was that? And it's like, you know, which isn't a bad thing to me. And Johnny, I got caught up in it, and I could, even thinking back now to certain scenes and stuff, I was just like, it was almost like I was given a window. It's like, here, you have a window on a world of a complete and total asshole for 80 minutes. And I was like, wow. And then it was like, in the ending, I just freaking loved, man. And I was like, that was just so cool.
It was, yeah, there was something to that, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, should I think deeply about this or not at all? You know, I wasn't sure. Just like... But my reaction was just like, that was awesome.
So I was gonna say, Bill, like you didn't, you were kind of like, it sounds like you were just swept along for the ride, like you were kind of, you were in the grip of the movie, basically.
I was, and you know what? It's been a long while since a movie's really gripped me. You know, some like even when I was watching the film 1917, like
Oh, yeah.
the first, you know, the first act gripped me, and then I'm like, all right, I know where they're going, I know what's going to happen now. Oh, there it is, and it's like, oh, there we go, and it was like, and then they tell you something at the end that they should have told you at the beginning to add more suspense, and I'm like, okay, it was great, it was a damn good movie, but it wasn't like one of my top 10
Yeah.
military films of all time, you know, and it didn't sweep me away like, you know, like watching Saving Private Ryan did the first time, or
Oh
you
yeah.
know, the first time, the only time I saw it in a theater. I owned it, I bought the DVD right away. I've never watched it again. I don't think I can, but
It's a hard movie, yeah.
it's a, yeah, damn. And yeah, this one, I don't know, it's like, you know, sometimes when you hear somebody say like, yeah, this band sounds like this other band that you love, and you listen to that band, and you're like, that band sucks. And it's like, but don't you see the resemblance? Yeah, but it just doesn't work. I don't know how the notes work. I don't know. I mean, in 5 years, I could go, man, what a piece of shit was I thinking? And in 5 years, I can go, you know what? I should put this on my best horror movie list. You know, I don't know.
Well, and I go through that too, Bill. It's like occasionally I'll just feel compelled to rewatch something that didn't leave a good impression on me or just left kind of a meh impression on me, and I'll just dig it up. I'll rent it or, you know, find it somehow, give it another spin, and you know, I'll wind up liking it. You know, it's like, oh, well, what? Why didn't I see that? Why wasn't that the movie I saw the first time I watched it? And you know, obviously so many variables could go into why something plays different for you a second time years down the road than it did the first time you saw it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, my love for a lot of movies has waned over time, and you know, in other ways, you know, other movies, you know, have stepped up. When
Well, you
I'm,
know, go ahead.
no, you go ahead, man.
Well, you're a comparison to a thrash metal concert. Kind of brought a thought to mind. There's this band, actually, it's a one woman band called Pharmacon with a K. And she's for all intents and purposes like an industrial musician, like but a contemporary industrial musician. So I've seen her, I have her albums, I've seen her live 2 times. And most people, if someone came off the street knowing nothing about her and stepped into a live set by her, they would probably be turned off really heavily because watching her live is like being inside a subwoofer. It's just totally aggressive, harsh, you know, metal on metal, really abrasive, heavily abrasive stuff. And it Bliss is hugely abrasive in its aesthetics. Part of me was like, this should be like a Pharmacon show for me, and it's not. So there's this weird disconnect between what I see in Pharmacon and what I see in a movie like Bliss or don't see in a movie like Bliss. It's very strange. So I'm just trying to find a bit of common ground here with what you were saying, because it's like it doesn't make sense for me either. That it's like I probably should feel a way similar or have at least liked it a little better than you. I mean, liked it somewhat better than I did, but I didn't. I hated
Maybe
this part.
I should like it less than I do, you know? I don't know.
No, I'm not saying you should. It's just you liked it, and you know, I did not.
Oh man. No, that's fine, man. I mean, you know, I was trying to think of like, in fact, I was thinking today, like, there's this band, The Briefs. They're
Okay.
out of Seattle. Founded 1999. I have their CD Hit After Hit, and they're right, it's a hit after hit. And as I'm listening to it, it's like, oh man, I could hear a little Misfits, I could hear a little Ramones, I could hear a
Yeah.
little The Knack and Rizzillos, Weirdos, and even a little GBH. And I'm like, every song I'm listening to in there sounds like a missing West Coast punk song from when punk was founded. And I'm like, that's really cool. Yet, if you came in here and said, hey, Bill, listen to, this is Rancid, listen to it, I'd be like, get that shit out of my house. You know what I mean? And like, I never had like love for Rancid. I never had love. I still hate it when people are like, oh, Patti Smith Group, they're punk. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here before I murder you and go to jail. You know, it's like,
right. You
know? And, right.
And what's canon to someone is not necessarily canon for everybody. You
canon
know?
To one person, canon fodder to another.
Yes, absolutely. I like that, Bill. Or thanks. Canon pitchers for that matter. Yeah. Golden Globus, baby.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Every time I saw, like, I sat down to watch a movie and I saw their logo come on, I'm like, oh.
Life Force, baby.
Then I saw Life Force and I was like, they got one right. And it ruined them. That was the movie that ruined them.
Well, part of me is like, of all the movies you would spend that much money on in 1985 dollars, that's the one you picked. That's kind of it obviously wasn't Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So yeah
but so I don't know, Johnny. I have no answers. None.
I have fewer, Bill. I'm actually been rendered speechless by this conversation.
Yeah, because it's pretty much like a simple one-note film, man. You're following her as she walks down a path, and that's it.
And, you know, like I said, had there been something different about maybe the character or just the ensemble or whatever, maybe I would have hooked into it. Maybe I would have found some merit in it, but I just couldn't. I could not with this movie, so... So what would you give Bliss, Bill, on a scale of 1 to 5? I want to hear this score because I want to have a good laugh. Yeah.
Well, before I give you my score, I just want to say that one of the reasons that film noir and noir books, hard-boiled detective thrillers, work so well is the reason the stories happen and things are resolved at the end is because the main character doesn't change. And if you think about like a lot of the sleuths or, you know, private detectives and stuff that you read about in some of these books, if you read like enough of a series, you'll see that. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, you might see a little bit of a shift here and there, but normally it's like, I'm gonna get the guy, and at the end, I got the guy, and like that's, you know, that's it. And the reason they got the guy is because they were a relentless bastard, you know. And it's like, and so that you know what I liked about this was because she's like, I'm an asshole, and she ends an asshole, and it does her in at the end. And because other people don't change, like everything stops for all of them, and that's what I thought was the coolest.
It's an interesting observation, Bill.
that means Bill, I don't agree with you at all, but
I'm being diplomatic here. Come on.
Oh, whatever.
I'm being serious. I mean, I think if that's what you got out of it and that was enough for you, then that's great. I mean, I know there's a lot of other stuff you talked about that you liked about the movie, so I'm glad I'm genuinely glad when a movie works for someone. You know, mm-hmm. It doesn't have to work for me, although I'm happier when it does work for me too. But you know, I'm glad people are supporting cinema. You know, Joe Bagos has another movie out right now on demand, and I will watch it at some point.
VFW.
Even though it looks to me like Green Room meets Mandy, and I'm very hesitant after watching Bliss hey, it's like an Abel Ferrara movie, but not for me. So, you know.
It also looks like Hobo with a Shotgun.
Which I did not like.
Oh, that piece of shit. That was awful. I wanted to commit murder.
The 2-minute fake trailer that inspired Hobo with a Shotgun
that
is
was
like
brilliant.
That's like 100 times better than the actual movie. They didn't know. It should never have been turned into a feature. That was the worst idea
ever.
Yeah, one of the worst ideas ever. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, you know, just going back, looking at that, like I'm thinking of the music and like the sets, the color, the cinematography, everything that they did with Bliss. It was like when I first bought, when I got my first, not knowing her at all, my first Nina Hagen record when I was a kid. I brought it home and I'm listening to it. And back then I'd have the lights off in the room, have my headphones on. I'd be laying down on the floor. And I remember after two songs, I turned the album off and I'm like, my mom was like, well, what's wrong, son? I'm like, I'm scared. I can't listen to that right now. And then over time I fell in love and, sure. You know, totally in love with Nina Hagen. I adore her to no end. And like with this, I don't know, I just like sank both my teeth into it and I gave it 4 stars, Johnny.
Oh, good Lord.
I knew that was coming. Go ahead with your no star, half star, quarter star.
I gave it a half star. Yeah.
What was the half?
I don't know. It's because
I don't know.
It's because I logged it on Letterboxd and they don't do 0 stars. A half is the lowest they go.
Yeah, but in your heart of hearts, is it a 0? I mean, I have to give on fucking IMDb, I have to give a star when a lot of times I want to put no star.
I would say probably there's... I don't know if I can quantify what would be worthy of a half star, but I'm sure there's something with the style, perhaps. Like, had it been translated differently, you know, had the script been something more than just... you know, just shrill characters, just unchanging characters. There's something to be said for the style, something to be said for the fact that it was shot on film, and there are people out there who love to kind of trumpet that fact these days with everything being digital. I liked Chris McKenna, who plays her agent. I wish he'd been in the movie more, like George Wendt. Okay, I like some of the supporting cast and Jeremy Gardner and...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I just think all of the characters were kind of just that flat one note, just screaming fuck all the time. It just was like, it was just tedious for me. So it's like any time like Chris McKenna would show up, because his character was so unlike that, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is awesome. We're seeing someone different here. And he's only in the movie for like 2 scenes, unfortunately. So, okay, I'll give it a half star for George Wendt and Chris McKenna. How's that sound? There we go. There's my justification.
Wow, man. No, sorry. Hey, no, I get it. That's fine.
Yeah. just I've had it with pretentious artists, man.
Well, it's funny because I didn't really get that feeling of pretentiousness from it. I just got like, I'm finally watching a horror movie that isn't over stylized, isn't loaded with some bullshit story where it's weighed down with plot points and it's like, here we go, she's an asshole and she's dead, you know, or whatever happens at the end, you know, I don't care, spoiler, fuck it. You know, I don't care.
Who cares?
Yeah, who gives a shit, you know? And I was taking a ride. I was like a fast roller coaster, you know. Instead of like, well, don't you want a quality funhouse excursion? No, I don't want a quality. I don't, put me on a fucking roller coaster. I want to get a rush for 2 minutes, and I did. It was like a drug, you know. It was like getting a shot in the arm for me.
Yeah, for me, it was like some joke roller coaster where they just whip you around in a circle for like an hour and 20 minutes, and I'm just throwing up on myself repeatedly. So yeah.
So what did you think of Dora Madison, though? I mean, like, even if you hated her character and all, and even though she said fuck like a million times, she...
I don't care about the fuck, man. I don't care about that. I feel like there wasn't a lot for me to judge the quality of her performance on, honestly, because there's just... Maybe let me put it this way. I feel like if she can commit to the visceral stuff that's in this movie, then she could go places dramatically, definitely. And I would look forward to her maybe branching out from horror or, you know, just doing something else. I think she could be a talent to watch. Yeah. But I feel like the talent is not well utilized in this film. She's fearless. She's mm-hmm. fearless, you know, because yeah. she's asked to do certain things in this movie that other actresses would probably be like, I'm not doing that. I'm not getting all that blood sprayed on me. I'm not taking my clothes off, you know. So I think there is an element of just kind of like, she's up for whatever, So that's very a good trait to have as an actress or just an actor. And yeah, so I would say I look forward to seeing what she has to offer us in the future, because I think she definitely has potential. I just don't think that potential is very well realized in this film, unfortunately.
Well, one of the things that I liked about it, about her and her character, was I've seen pictures of her before, and she seems like a very fun person.
Okay.
And very beautiful. And in this movie, you know, Desi isn't like, you know, some crazed hotbox. You know, she's like, you could tell there's a level of attractiveness there, but she's just like, she just doesn't even give a shit about herself, you know? And so I really liked, you know, so I know she worked, you know, to make it happen. And in fact, I'm texting you a picture of the lovely Dora Madison right now, because, and maybe you'll see her in a different light, Johnny.
Thank you, Billy.
Why do I feel like a press agent for this fucking film?
I don't know, but I just got it. Let me take a look while we're on the air. So we'll do it live. Okay. I see what you mean.
All right.
Total contrast. Yeah. Total
yeah,
contrast.
Yeah. So, you know, she went, she went deep to make this character rock, you know?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that is indicative of, definitely. There's no question that, you know, she was committed to that role. I just wish, like I've been saying, I wish she'd been challenged to add some more depth and dimension. And I realize that's not her fault. That's a shortcoming of the script for me. That the character wasn't written as strongly or as interestingly as she could have been. But again, my two cents there. So
no, that's fine. So I guess, you know, hey, if you loved it, hated it, let us know.
And I guess we'll be getting back to you with what we thought of VFW.
Sometime in the near future, yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah. So. Oh my God. Yeah, I sent you another picture of her. Too.
Billy, are you going to paint a portrait of some people to scream out to tonight?
Oh yeah, absolutely, and I'm going to do it right now, my friend.
Okay.
And here we go. These are people on Twitter that we love, respect, and admire. And
goodness gracious, Bill. Yeah.
And it's actually 9 people today because stupid me put the same person twice because they're so nice.
Aww.
But we already mentioned Dixie Ferry, and
yes,
that's the great Kim McDonald. You can follow on Twitter. So that's like sort of our first scream out. She's wonderful, and I hope she gets me some more articles soon, because every time she writes something, it's like, wow, she's going up notches, and I just feel like Dora Madison's character, Desi. I'm just staying the same.
Oh, that's how I feel too. So we're kind of in the same boat on that, Bill.
But I can't wait to see the book you're working on. But anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Our first scream out goes to the wonderful Ken Stark. And who is that on Twitter? He is Penniless Scribe, an award-winning horror writer, questionable painter, unapologetic nerd, and committed beer enthusiast. I want to go, because he lives in Vancouver, man.
I want to visit Vancouver sometime.
You will go visit Vancouver and you'll be like, Bill, I'm not coming back. It's my favorite city. And I'm obviously haven't been to every city in the world, but I love Vancouver. And you can follow him at kenstark.ca for all of his writing and more.
Quick aside, Bill, Vancouver was the birthplace of my favorite band, Skinny Puppy.
Nice.
Yeah. And so anyway.
And you're still skinny after all these years. That's good.
Oh, they're still skinny, all right.
Frumpy Puppy, they were going to call themselves at one.
Well, I was going to call my band Fat Kitty, so, you know.
Fat Kitty. Not yeah. Fat Cat, Fat Kitty.
Fat Kitty.
Oh, man. Boston actress. Who the hell is that? That is Stacy with an E, Buzz 2013. She is a Boston actor, model known for Ted 2, American Hustle, Grown Ups 2, Patriots Day, The Judge, RIPD, and many additional feature films. And you could follow her on imdb.com. Again, that is Stacy Buzz. Owen McCune Quest.
Yeah.
That is Owen McCune, he's an expressive actor with voiceover chops who brings your scripts to life. And that he does. He's also, he might not admit it, but he's also an amazing sound engineer. Highly respected and loved and admired. And if you're making a film, you want to put him in it. Yep. Trust me. I can't wait to work with him again in the very near future. He never has to audition for me. He is in. You could follow him on owenmccune.com. Check him out there and see the work he's done. Check out his, oh my gosh, check out his reels. And this is interesting because this is this came out of the blue and it's really cool. This is Justin Bienvenu. Mm. And he, and that is also his Twitter handle. And he is the 1,000th retweeter of the pinned tweet for this podcast.
Oh,
with,
wow.
With art by Greg Falco on our, on my, the Crash Palace Twitter page. So thank you so much to you. The scream outs to you. He is an indie author, poet, horrorpreneur. How about that? Creative human being writing to scare, inspire, entertain, and stay sane. Good luck with the sane part, buddy. We're all losing it. And his book, The Wax Factory, is out now. And you could check him out at justinbienvenu.com. Thank you again, Justin, for the retweet.
That's awesome. Yeah.
This is a wonderful person. I love her. Dvorka Milojevic. At Dvorka 1965774. She's a furious reader, frantic writer, along with 5 million other things, and with appreciated support of the writing community and the horror community. She's out of the Great Republic of Croatia. My buddy who does my book covers for my novels, he's Croatian, and wow, we love him. And you could follow her on Wattpad.com/user/DadaMilo, M-I-L-O. I'm mentioning this person because I know he has an opinion about this film and he's probably pissed that he's not on it. this is to Dave K, otherwise known as A Fiend on Film. We do have to have him on again.
the Ferrara cast.
Yeah. Oh my god, that'll be awesome.
I need to bring some of my expertise to this show. You guys are killing me.
He's a horror Indian foreign films, art, graphic design, architecture, photos, etc. person. He does these great fanzines. Just awesome, awesome work. He's amazing. And you can check him out at the Magnificent World. Actually, Magnificent World of Dave K. .wordpress.com.
Hey, just a quick heads up there. He also is doing another fanzine, I think, in June. That's a sequel to his fiendish zine from a couple years back.
Oh,
and he is asking for people to come out and contribute to that. So there's more details at the website Billy mentioned if you'd like to shoot a review or something his way. Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely connect with him on Twitter at A Fiend on Film, and you can even learn more about it from there. That is awesome. Monster Mash Ken. Who is he? Monster Mash Ken is a producer, co-host of East Coast Nation Podcast and Where the Scary Things Are Horrorcast. So that's ECN Podcast as well, Scary Horrorcast. He is a diehard Raiders fan. he also loves Star Wars. Really cool guy. A lot of fun. He put together the Strange Pod Net for us, for several people in the horror zone. So yeah, that's really cool. And you could check him out at buzzsprout.com/256458. Pop Horror News, your favorite online horror destination. Horror News reviews, trailers, interviews, gaming every day for us is Halloween. We love that. They follow back. They support indie horror. They're very good with that stuff. They're out of Illinois, and you can check them out at pophorror.com. And this is to, first of all, I'm going to do a quick scream out to Palco at Palco Designs, palcodesigns.com. We talk about him frequently on this show because he's not just a fan. He did the artwork for the show for my website at crashpalaceproductions.com. And he has also said, hey, Bill, do you know so-and-so? You need to get them on your show. And he's done that for like 10 people. including the great Bill Oberst Jr. Having him on this show was amazing.
Yeah.
And he was like, Billy, I have to have Jeremy Wagner on your show. And I spoke to Jeremy last night. He's a horror collector. Check out that podcast. He is an amazing soul. In fact, I'm going to tell you where he is now. You could follow him on Twitter at Jeremy X Wagner. And he is the acclaimed author of Rabbit Heart and The Armageddon Chord, because he's a horror author, a writer, guitarist, not just a guitarist. He's a guitarist and lyricist for the band that he helped founded, Broken Hope Band, death metal, back in 88. They came together. He's into horror and dark fiction. And you could check out his site at jeremy-wagner.com. He's fantastic. He came on the show to talk about his horror collection. And it's not just a horror collection. It's a horror movie prop collection.
Nice.
And he is a curator of horror, as he put it, which is great. A conservationist. Very passionate. I'm not going to tell you about the movies he loves. I want you to hear that podcast. And he has a couple of collectibles on there that just made me want to just jump out a window, because just amazing. And he's a great guy. So enjoy that, please. Jeremy, thanks for coming on the show. And Johnny, I pretty much told people where they could find me already.
Well, you know, Bill, I wanted to shoot a scream out of my own.
Yes. We have
Tyler at My Opinions Man on Twitter. And the fact that the reason I'm bringing Tyler up is because he was a fan of Bliss. So Tyler, if you've made it to the end of the show, and thank you for making it to the end of the show, and I hope you continue to listen to our show despite my dissenting opinion on the film. That's all.
I hope, and knowing him, he could put it in better words about why it's a good movie, and I'd go, yeah, that's it.
he is really talented at just giving you a bunch of pictures and then giving you a 280 character tweet, and you totally get the full picture from him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what's awesome. He is one of my favorite people to follow on Twitter, because even when our tastes don't overlap, he's very diplomatic. You know, as long as you're cool to him, he'll be cool to you. So, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And normally when he says, "Hey, this movie's great, you should see it," and I'm like, "Oh, he's Tyler," I put it on right on my list.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Him and Palco, I mean, you know, they're like worlds apart in the way they deliver things. And it's like those two guys, if they say watch a film, I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah, I love it when Palco doesn't like stuff. It cracks me up.
Oh, it's pure unadulterated hatred, man. He's like, rah! He's like going to rip apart your village and shit.
Gorgoroth shovels shit on your movie. Yeah.
God, I love Gorgoroth. Man, now that's all I want to play right now is Gorgoroth. Sign of an open eye.
Or just Gwar, yeah. Well, Bill,
where can we find you, man?
Where can we find me? Okay. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my writing at CrashPalaceProductions.com, because Billy's a good guy. And yeah, there we have it.
You're an excellent writer, man. It's nothing to do with that. And that's my segue. And I do have another Twitter handle called Noir Kink, and if you go there, it's all about my crazy erotic crime thriller series and all that fun stuff. So
it's a good Twitter to follow. Yeah.
Oh, please, Johnny, you're so nice. Say more. No, anyway. So that's it, man. We're I'm at a point of bliss for real.
You know, Bill, I'm not in a point of bliss, but I'm going to indulge in the bliss of a hot calzone.
Shit, man, I'm gonna let you go then. That
for dinner. So,
yeah.
So I'm gonna compensate. Yeah.
All right, man. Will you enjoy that calzone?
I will.
All right, man, and I'm gonna enjoy leftover enchiladas, I think.
Well, those are good too. So.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's real starving artist food, Bill, so I approve.
Fuck you, man! I need money to... Oh, forget it.
Fuck, fuck, fuckity fuck! I'm in a Rob Zombie movie. Fuck, fuck, fuck!
Shit, I wish I was in a Rob Zombie movie. That'd be great. Like, can I kill something? Oh, no, you're the victim. Fuck! Okay. That's exactly what would happen too.
Yeah, yeah, you'd show up as one of those cult actor cameos, Bill, yeah. And just for a scene. Yeah.
Oh man. Anyway, good night, Johnny.
Night, Billy.
All right, bye.